Hello, everyone. Larry Du Bois here. We are back doing our Bible study in the book of Acts, and it's been a few weeks since I made a video of any sort, but we did the book of Acts. Last lesson was chapter 26, and it was episode 47. This time, we're going to be doing episode 48, and it's Acts 27, 1 through 44 verses. I've been absent from a hip surgery. And for those that had been on Facebook and other places, I just want to thank you for praying for me. It was a success. Praise the Lord. I can't say enough good things about how God really come through. I'm still a little bit in awe of what he did and how I came out of it so well. I'm recovering quite well, doing my walking. I got permission to drive already. I'm just excelling in every possible way from it. So we are back now doing some videos. And so one of the things I wanted to mention in the book of Acts in particular now, these are historical accounts, a narrative written by Luke. And a lot of times there's not a lot of practical lessons as you go through these narratives. And this chapter is basically, I titled it, Paul's Voyage to Rome Begins. And basically, it's going to start where we can actually go to our slide here. We are going to be looking at basically where the ship runs aground. It has all kinds of problems. And there's sort of an exciting voyage there, but not a lot of practical lessons, but we'll try to hit some as we go through. Nevertheless, it is a good account of what took place as Paul made it to Rome to preach the gospel before kings and authorities and all kinds of people. So that's great. That's what the Lord had for him. But let's do a brief review of chapter 26. Basically, Paul gives a hearty testimony before King Agrippa, not sparing the elements of the gospel. He then challenges Agrippa to believe in the Lord. And that's chapter 26. And you can look at any of the past chapters. And sometimes we don't make it through a whole chapter, but I got all the videos on my website, sharingyourfaithradio.com. You can look at past broadcasts if you're so inclined. So the introduction here, chapter 27, this chapter, it covers the whole voyage, starting at finding a ship headed to Italy, the decision to continue sailing. There's an encountering of a massive storm, and the chapter ends with all the people aboard swimming to shore after the ship breaks up along the coast. So that's kind of a summary in a nutshell. So let's go ahead. I did a little brief outline of the chapter, and hopefully without being redundant here, I have my bullet points. Paul handed over to a centurion. The prisoners placed on ship headed for Italy. First stop is the island of Crete. Decision to sail to another harbor, safe to winter in. Actually, excuse me, the second stop is in Crete. I actually have that wrong. It's the first layover. The ship encounters a storm. Efforts to save the ship are given up. I spelled save wrong. All on board are saved as they swim to shore. So that's basically kind of repeating what I did in the introduction. It's a little outline. Sometimes if you go to study a book of the Bible, one of the things when you do it yourself and you actually take a computer and type it or write it with pen and ink or pencil and just outline the highlights. What it does is it helps you to observe things you may not normally observe than just reading it. As you're writing, you're studying it, you're reading, you're praying. Another thing it helps is the retention. It's easy to retain what happened in a certain chapter. Okay. So let's go ahead and go verse by verse. I entitled this little subheading here, Paul and other prisoners handed over to Julius. And this is the first couple verses there, 1 through 3. If you have your own Bible, please follow along if you're able to. All right, here we go. And when it was decided that we should sail to Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to one named Julius, a centurion of the Augustan regiment. So entering a ship of the Adramyttium, not sure if I pronounced that right, we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coasts of Asia. Artychicus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, was with us. And the next day we landed at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him liberty to go to his friends and receive care. Okay, so early on, after Paul appeals to Caesar, they finally group him with these other prisoners, and he's entrusted to this man named Julius. Now, as you may know, we covered this before in the book of Acts, or in the Gospels, if you've ever read them, a centurion basically is an officer, generally thought to have been in charge of 100 soldiers. That's the term, century. Get the 100, that's the idea there. So a centurion, he would be in charge of 100 soldiers. He was of the Augustan regiment. So in other words, he was of some sort of, secret service maybe type thing with the Caesar. He had a prominent placement, and he was not just a centurion in an army that, you know, just did everything or anything, but he was attached to, his assignment was the special soldiers that were closely knitted to Augusta or Caesar. So that was his division or whatever. Okay, so anyway, they entered a ship of Adramyttium. Now that actually is a city, and so this ship belonged to that town. That's all Luke writes about it. In those days, the Roman soldiers, they basically just commandeered a ship. If they wanted to go back to Rome, and they would basically hitch a ride on a ship carrying grain or other kinds of wares or supplies. They wouldn't have a special ship that was, you know, like sheriff's department. We think of nowadays when they transport prisoners, they got a special car, a special plane, a special bus, whatever it might be, even maybe a boat. But it's designated to the task of those prisoners only. Well, the infrastructure back in those days, they didn't have it like that. They just sort of commandeered a ship that was headed the way they wanted to go. And a lot of times, too, it could have been on the return trip. We know in this trip they had cargo. But a lot of times, maybe it was an empty run, kind of like a trucker. You know, he goes one way across the nation with a load of groceries of some sort, let's just say. Well, he doesn't want to come back empty-handed. He wants to come back. He wants to pick up another load of some sort of supply of something to bring back, so he doesn't waste it, come back with an empty trailer. Well, anyway, they were going to sail along the coast of Asia. That was their plan. Okay, so they put to sea, and this guy, Artychicus, and I'm not pronouncing that right, I know, quite a name there. But anyway, he's mentioned 5 times there in the New Testament. He was first thought of as a companion that traveled with Paul early on. He was in the city of Ephesus when that riot took place. He was traveling with Paul, and he's with him here. Later, when Paul writes in the book of Colossians, this guy was arrested with Paul, so he was a fellow prisoner with Paul. Anyway, it said he's a Macedonian, and he was from the town of Thessalonica. And so he was with us. Now, as Luke writes this, he uses the term we again. So in all likelihood, he rejoined Paul at this point in time. We don't know. Maybe he was living near Caesarea, but he has a firsthand account, and he says he was with us, meaning him and Paul, and of course the other prisoners. And then verse 3 there, the next day we landed at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him liberty to go to his friends and receive care. And that would have been a great favor that the Lord had given Paul before this man. And it's going to pay off later on, as we're going to see. Well, let's look here. I got a map, and we're going to probably refer to this a couple of times just so we get an idea. So here, I don't know if my pointer is showing up in the video. Sometimes it doesn't. But anyway, you got down on the lower right-hand side there, Caesarea. That's where they took off from. Well, their first stop was in Sidon. And in my introduction, I said their first stop was Crete, but that isn't so. So they stopped here in Sidon, and then they must have stayed over a little bit because he was able to go ashore and, you know, had a little bit of time there, okay? So let's continue on. In verses 4 through 8, when we had put to sea from there, that's from that Sidus, we sailed under the shelter of Cyprus. Okay, so if we go back to the map, there's the island of Cyprus. So they sailed on the inside around of that to be protected from this open sea. And so they just, that would have been the smart way to go. They were already going north here. They just cut across and they go behind that island of Cyprus. Okay, because the winds were contrary. All right. And then it says, and when we had sailed over the sea, which is off Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. There, the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing to Italy, and he put us on board. Okay, so let's go back to the map quick. So now he is up in Myra. And in Myra, it tells us that they switched ships, basically. So they got off the first ship, and now they found another ship, an Alexandrian ship, most likely hauling grain or something, sailing to Italy, okay? So the centurion made arrangements. He put all the prisoners on board. Now it says, when we had sailed slowly many days and arrived with difficulty off Cnidus, the wind not permitting us to proceed, we sailed under the shelter of Crete off Salome. Passing it with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens near the city of Lycia. Okay, so back to our map. So that's that Cnidus, a weird spelling with a C and an N-I-D-S. So they skirted that. They came down with difficulty down to Crete, and they made it to, let's see here. Whoops, sorry about that. They came with a shelter of Crete, and they ended up in Fair Havens. So there's Fair Havens on the southern part of Crete there in the middle of the map. Okay. So the next passages here from 9 to 12. Now, when much time had been spent, sailing was now dangerous because of the fast was already over. And this fast they're talking about probably would have been in September of the year. And so it had been over. So now they're going to be entering into the winter. They're going to be entering into a lot of the times when these places had storms. So it says, Paul advised them, saying, men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and ship, but also our lives. Now, Paul, he probably sailed around before, but he wasn't a sailor. And you could say, well, he took an educated guess. You know, if we start sailing during this, we're probably going to have problems because it's going to be wintertime, right? It's a no-brainer, as it were. I think he was getting some inside information from the Lord here, though, because he's kind of specific in what would happen. It says their lives would be in danger. They're going to lose the cargo. Well, in verse 11, nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than by the things spoken of Paul. So, you know, the guy, I mean, you can't blame him. Paul, who's he? He's a prisoner. He's a prisoner going to Rome. You know, and these guys are experts. The helmsman, you know, the guy who was used to sailing, and the owner of the ship, they were ones going to make this decision. And it says, because the harbor was not suitable to winter in, the majority advised to set sail from there also, if they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete opening toward the southwest and northwest, and winter there. So on that map there, if you go up around the corner, there was that harbor of Phoenix, and they were hoping to at least make it there. So verses 13 through 17, it says, "When the south wind blew softly, supposing they had obtained their desire, putting out to sea, they sailed close by Crete." All right, so when they first started, there was no storm. They probably wouldn't have gone. But it seemed like, okay, it's pretty nice weather, right? And it's very deceiving. It seemed like, hey, everything's fine. But it says, "Not long after, a tempestuous headwind arose called the Eurocladon. So when the ship was caught and could not head into the wind, we let her drive. And running under the shelter of an island called Clauda, we secured the skiff with difficulty. When they had taken it on board, they used cables to undergird the ship, and fearing lest they should run aground on the Syrtis sands, they struck sail and were so driven." Well, this is interesting. It helps to have some understanding of sailing here, because they're going to use some terms, you know, that sailors would be familiar with in a kind of a boat and that sort of thing. So, anyway, continuing on. Whoops, sorry about that. It says, "Because we were exceedingly tempest-tossed, the next day they lightened the ship. On the third day, we threw the ship's tackle overboard with our own hands. Now when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and no small tempest beat on us, all that we would be saved was finally given up. But after long abstinence from food, then Paul stood up in the midst of them and said, 'Men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss.'" So here they are now. The storm's getting worse. It got so bad they didn't see light for several days. Just clouds and storms and rain, and the boat probably going to get seasick. You know, they lightened the ship the best they could, throwing some of the stuff overboard that they didn't really need. Tackle might have been stuff like extra ropes, extra supplies, that sort of thing. And they'd given up that they were going to make it out alive. But they went a long time without food. And Paul stood in the midst and said, "You should have listened to me." Well, you know, it is a great opportunity to say, "Look, I told you so. You should have listened to me. Now look what's happening." Well, I don't know that he was doing that to rub it in. I think he was pointing it out because there's going to come a time here in the very short future, he's going to say some other things. And he wanted to establish, I believe, and remind them, look, I predicted this was going to happen. And so as you're going to see, they're going to start to listen to Paul now after this. So he wants to bring that up and I think establish that. Okay, so now as we go to 22 through 26, it says, "Now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For there stood by me this night an angel of God to whom I belong and whom I serve, saying, 'Do not be afraid, Paul, you must be brought before Caesar, and indeed God has granted you all those who sail with you. Therefore take heart, men, for I believe God that it will be just as it was told me. However, we must run aground on a certain island.'" And so Paul is now making a prediction that he had got from an angel sent by the Lord that even though it looks bleak, it looks like you're going to die, you're certainly going to go to Rome and stand before Caesar. So you're going to make it. Now, he says the other guys are going to be granted their lives with you. Paul was the main person here. You know, he was the one, the spotlight's on him. God could have saved him and no one else if he wanted to. But it was the graciousness of God that he almost like Paul makes it sound like it's because Paul is in with the Lord. He's also granted that all your lives would be spared, you know, because of me. I must get to Rome, see? Well, so he tells him to take heart and that he believes God, that it will be just as it is said. And now he has a track record of being right. So they would have reason to say, hey, that would encourage him, I would think. And then, of course, he says, we must run aground on a certain island. So we don't know how much information he was given by the angel, but enough. And he showed him that the ship was going to suffer loss, but their lives would be spared. Okay, verses 27 and through 29. Now when the 14th night had come, as we were driven up and down the Adriatic Sea, about midnight the sailors sensed that they were drawing near some land. And they took soundings and found it to be 20 fathoms. And when they had gone a little further, they took soundings again and found it to be 15 fathoms. Then, fearing lest we should run aground on the rocks, they dropped four anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. All right, so they were in the midst of the sea, and the soundings, I don't know what kind of equipment they had back then, now it's all electronic, but they were able to bounce something off the bottom and to measure how deep it was. And of course, fathoms is a measurement they use in a sea, and I forget how many miles that is exactly. But anyway, you can look that up yourself. But they kept taking these soundings to measure how far they were. Maybe they were close to shore. So they put the anchors in and just prayed for day to come that they would make it. And verse 30, as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship when they had let down the skiff into the sea under the pretense of putting out anchors from the prow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the skiff and let it fall off. And so Paul had favor now with the centurion. I'm sure he, with authority, he says, look, if these guys get, we're not going to be saved if they take off. So they were fearful of that, and they believed Paul, and so they cut the ropes and wouldn't let the guys take off with this letting down the skiff, which is a small boat, like a little dinghy, to like a rowboat to get out of harm's way. So they just cut the ropes, and that was that. Now, in verse 33 through 35, and as day was about to dawn, Paul implored them all to take food, saying, today is the 14th day you have waited and continued without food and eaten nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take nourishment, for this is your survival, since not a hair will fall from your head of any of you. And when he had said these things, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all, and when he had broken it, he began to eat. And so again, Paul taking the leadership and was encouraging them to take some food. Between the worry of them not making it out alive and the fact that the ship's being tossed all over the place, you probably wouldn't have much of an appetite. But he took encouragement and took some bread and strengthened them. And he again reiterates the promise that they're not going to be harmed. Not one hair will fall from the head of any of you. So that's a pretty mighty statement of security there. Now when they were all encouraged and they took food themselves, and in all we were 276 persons on the ship. So Paul had an audience of like all these people. And can you imagine? And so when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and threw out the wheat into the sea. So there we know where they were carrying grain, they were carrying wheat. So they threw out, at that point, everything they could think of just to make the ship lighter, including the cargo, which was, you know, they were going to lose that. Somebody, the owner of the ship or the company, was going to be a loss. They weren't going to be able to spare that. When it was day, they did not recognize the land, but observed a bay with a beach, unto which they planned to run the ship if possible. And they let go the anchors and left them in the sea. Meanwhile, loosing the rudder ropes, they hoisted the mainsail to the wind and made for shore. And then it says, but striking a place where the two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the prow stuck fast and remained immovable, but the stern was being broken up by the violence of the waves. So basically, the ship was like head first, stuck in the ground where these two seas met. It was probably churning up a lot of stuff, a lot of waves. And in the violence of the waves, it started breaking up the ship. So the soldier plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim away and escape. And so that was the tradition with Roman soldiers. They didn't want anybody to escape. It would cost them their lives. Well, but the centurion, wanting to save Paul, kept them from their purpose. So again, the Lord giving favor to this centurion with Paul, and so they didn't kill anybody, but they commanded that those who could swim should jump overboard first and get to land, and the rest, some on boards and some on parts of the ship, and so it was that they all escaped safely to land. Now, I don't know where the soldiers thought that these guys would escape to. You know, maybe they thought, okay, they'll get to the beach, they'll run away or something. I don't know. But they could have all drowned too, but it was promised that they were going to be spared. So those that couldn't swim grabbed pieces of the ship, the wood, and just floated into there. And with much difficulty, they finally all made it to shore there. And that's where the chapter ends. And next time we pick it up in chapter 28, where they are on an island called Malta. And that's basically the last chapter in Acts. So we'll cover that next time. Maybe not a great, exciting chapter to do a lot of practical instruction in. But I guess if we could get anything out of it, Paul was trusting God from the start. And his faith helped him to be able to stand up in front of people and express his faith, express what the Lord had told him. And they listened to him because he had a track record. And so that might be one lesson. If we're going to speak for the Lord, or if we're going to predict things or something like this, we have to be accurate. We have to be credible. We don't want to start saying a bunch of goofy things and then people are going to write us off as a nutcase. But, you know, Paul was, you know, when he told them that, hey, I think we're going to end in disaster, he didn't say, God told me. I think he had some inside information, but he didn't let them know that. He just made a statement, and they weren't going to listen to him. But eventually he built credibility, and then he was able to speak into their lives, basically. And because of Paul, really, all these guys, their life was spared, even though, like it was told, the ship was a disaster and they lost everything else. Well, anyway, that's it, my friends. Thank you for joining us. And I might be a little bit rusty coming back. I did have normally I have a little different kind of format with the video, with a blue screen behind me, but just it was a little difficult to get that going this time. Maybe next time will be for our last chapter. I'll have that up. Anyway, God bless you, and thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.